Hey, welcome to Big Jim's Garage here. Talk to Lee Diffie in just a second here. IndyCar on NBC.
Grab my water over here.
4 feet tall and shrinking fast.
Cool race in St. Louis. 42,000 people there. And the ratings are going up and the racing's fun and they really pass each other. It's interesting to see how IndyCar is catching. And it's funny how people are talking about the demise of NASCAR. Did anyone see the attendance at Bristol? It was packed. It was packed. So we'll talk with Lee about that. I also think IndyCar and Formula One, there's something there with all these IndyCar drivers, with Rossi and all the guys that, you know, Ericsson and stuff. There's got to be some sort of cross connect there, some way to promote it, make the two aware. Although I think ESPN has the rights to F1 right now. So anyway, we'll talk with Lee Diffie here in just a second, getting him ready to go. We got, what, two races left? Portland and Laguna Seca. Is that Lee? How are you, buddy?
Hi, Jim. How are you, Matt?
Wonderful, man. Another boring race for IndyCar. God, that was fun to watch.
That was awesome. It was really, really good.
So it was, it, you know, and it was, I got to be honest, when you're watching the race on TV, you knew there were pebbles up there when they got out of the racing line. But
sorry to interrupt you. It's a little bit difficult to hear you because I've got a Queen soundtrack playing in my ear.
I got too many buttons. That's my bad. There you go. I got rid of Queen.
There we go. Now I can hear you.
Can you tell we're in the studio? Anyway, but it was really interesting to see, like, the cars, when they got out of the racing line, like up into that second groove, how bad were those pebbles? Because I've never seen cars just take off like they're on ice like that.
Yeah, it was very much like that. It was pretty wild. And it was, I mean, I really feel for him, but kind of almost the ultimate irony was throughout the course of the weekend, it was Will Power who was kind of calling for his peers to go with him, you know, during the practice sessions and what have you, to create a two-line racetrack and a two-groove racetrack. And then, you know, as I said, the ultimate irony was he was the one who, unfortunately, was the first one to get up there and get bitten and go into the wall. So, it was quite treacherous, but, you know, I think the message got out there pretty clear. They all got the feedback pretty clearly, very quickly, that that wasn't a place to be.
Connor Daly has got to get a full-time ride next year, right?
Well, based on the weekend, you'd have to say yes. Based on the Indianapolis 500, you'd have to say yes. And, you know, I think when he did land a full-time job at AJ Foyt Racing a couple of years ago, I just think it was the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, the team was kind of going through, and is still, you know, the team, as they will tell you, they're going through a transformation, one step at a time, trying to rebuild and restructure. And, you know, Tony Kanaan's podium at the weekend did wonders for the team. That'll give everybody a huge morale boost. So, yeah, I think when Connor landed there, it was great that he got a full-time job. And at the time, himself and Carlos Munoz did a decent job. But then there was nothing there for it at the end of the year for him. So yeah, I'd love to see him get a fair crack at it and just see what he can do, because whenever he gets an opportunity, you know, the he's not a kid anymore. This young man, great young American talent, makes the most of it. And I think, you know, time and again he's demonstrated what he can do. So yeah, if there's some racing gods up there, you know, He'll land something, because he deserves it.
You guys were laughing during the race, the way he threw it into turn three. And I love it when you guys are just, you appreciate what he was doing, the way he bombed into turn three. And he wasn't out of control. He was just one of those guys who would go deeper than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he wasn't afraid, was he?
No.
He was. And even afterwards, you know, his reflections were, I loved the way this racetrack races. And, you know, he's done two races in the last 3 years now there, and he's had a fifth and a sixth, and you know, from low starting positions. So I mean, obviously that track suits his driving style, and on a night where there were so many things to celebrate and enjoy, he was one of the highlights for sure.
And the end of the race with Joseph Newgarden. Now I know it was Frucci up in front of him, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and now I know that it's the drivers, and I heard Joseph explain that after the race, that, you know, drivers, especially younger drivers, are just kind of hardwired to get back on the racing line as soon as they can, that he shouldn't have come back down. But Is Newgarden still in that like hyper-competitive stage where he sometimes loses focus on the big picture?
I think there's probably equity on both sides of the situation. I know that my colleague Paul Tracy did not share the view of Joseph Newgarden. He said Ferrucci's in front, and you know, Ferrucci can kind of go wherever he likes to go. There's going to be two sides of the story. I think probably, you know, it's one of those things. Just think about all of us when we're in traffic and you see somebody do something odd ahead of you on the freeway, and you get, particularly if it puts you in a risky situation, it heightens your sense of anxiousness, anxiety, or even anger. And then, you know, it takes you a while to calm down from that. And I think that's where Joseph was. I think he was shocked that Ferrucci put his car where he was, and then he got angry because it put him in a difficult position, and then he spun and then lost positions, ultimately lost championship points. And I think when we captured him on the broadcast, there was still that sense of anger and frustration with him. But I think he also had some valid points. It should have been a learning experience for Santino. He's a young guy still learning the way in professional IndyCar racing. And like I said, I think there's equity on both points. But thank goodness that both drivers got to the finish, and that wasn't, you know, it wasn't more serious than what it was.
Well, and you know, that's the thing, and I know you guys have talked about it too, that you want a driver to see red when they're racing. You have to have that edge. So you can't just all of a sudden expect somebody to get out of it. I mean, we always tell the story about Senna and Monaco. The second they told him to take it easy, he wrecked the car. I mean, these guys have to have that level of commitment to what they're doing. And if you ask them to take it easy, nothing good comes from it.
No, that's true, and especially on a track like that, you know. And I always, quite often, I get asked to people, why do I reiterate the point? And I do it because so people realize it's a mile and a quarter. It's not a very long oval, and they're doing speeds of, you know, in a straight line, upwards of 230 miles an hour. This place is no joke, you know. And again, Gateway turned on just a terrific race, and I. You know, for the owners, Curtis Francois, and the promoters, John Bomarito, and everybody involved, they've hit on some magic dust out there, and they really engage the local community. They kind of encourage as many local businesses and people to get involved, and then whatever it is that they have is attracting people. I'm not sure if you noticed, Jim, but when they go into turn one and two, in between turn one and two, on the driver's right, on the outside there's a grandstand. And the last 2 years, that grandstand, they haven't even bothered to open it.
Really?
They just said, let's just focus on the main grandstand. Let's put bums in seats on the main grandstand. They had so many people there this year that they had to open that second grandstand, and it was probably about a third full, which was fantastic. And I can tell you, when we finished the show and walked out of our broadcast booth at the top of the main grandstand and looked out at the sea of red tail lights of people trying to get out of there, I mean, it was, I don't have any official numbers on the crowd, but it was strong. It's the best it's ever been. And, you know, certainly since IndyCar returned there 3 years ago. And it's just, it's a feel-good factor for everybody. There was the most unusual podium you could have ever predicted.
Yeah, really. We haven't really talked about that.
Kanaan.
Yeah.
And then good crowd, great weather, just awesome. Everything was, it ticked every box for me.
You know, you think about Sato, and you think about, we have, you know, Rosenquist, but we have all these F1 guys. You think Rossi coming from F1 and Takuma Sato with his F1 heritage and Marcus Ericsson with F1. Is there an opportunity going forward with IndyCar and F1 to, I wouldn't say feeder series, because that kind of sort of downgrades IndyCar, but to have some sort of connection between the two as far as open wheel racing goes?
Well, I think you would see a lot more ex-F1 drivers, and you know, you got to remember too, F1 has a pretty good history and track record of spitting young drivers out if they don't cut it straight away in F1, right?
Right.
Or if another young driver comes along with a bigger check. So there are a lot of drivers, you know, and you could say like Sebastian Buemi, Jaime Alguersuari, you know, like you could just go down all of these young guys, like Marcus Ericsson, Felipe Nasr, who is now in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. You know, the list goes on over the years. And I think you would see a lot more of them in IndyCar or attempting to come to IndyCar if it weren't for the ovals. I don't think from the European style of races, not a whole lot of them warm to the ovals. And you've seen that just this year alone with Max Chilton. He's made the decision. He's in a position where he is fortunate enough to make the decision where, you know what, I'm going to do some risk management. And I love road course racing and street course racing. And I love the Indianapolis 500. But short, high-speed ovals, I'm not that thrilled on, so I'm not going to do it. So I think, I'm not sure about the link, how strong that link is between the F1 and IndyCar, because I think maybe if there were less ovals, more would come. But that's not what IndyCar's about. IndyCar's about short ovals, super speedways, road courses and street courses, and I don't think that should ever change, because that's what makes an IndyCar driver. If you're a champion in IndyCar, you've been the best on four very, very different disciplines.
And it's, but when you watch Ericsson, Marcus seems to excel, which is startling to me. He loves ovals.
He does. I don't think he'd love Gateway.
Well, no. Okay. That
it wasn't that kind to him.
Right.
But
yeah.
You're right. He has had a decent run. He finished seventh at Texas, and he was having a phenomenal run at the Indy 500 until, by his own admission, he made a mistake on pit lane entry. And you know, when you see guys like that, and Santino Ferrucci, who didn't make it to F1, he was a Haas F1 development driver, but, you know, and did some time in the F1 car, but never raced F1, but did the two junior categories, F3 and F2, on the way before returning to the US. You know, he's taken to ovals like he's like a veteran, which is quite extraordinary. I just think, Jim, the positives surrounding the IndyCar series, the NTT IndyCar series at the moment, are phenomenal, because you still have the veterans and the champions like Tony Kanaan and Ryan Hunter-Reay and Scott Dixon and Sebastian Bourdais and, you know, all of these legendary names that have been around for a long time. But then you don't have to look too far to say, where's the next generation? Because you've got them.
Right.
In the Felix Rosenquists and the Santino Ferrucci's and Zach Veach's and Alexander Rossi's,
Colton
and
Herta,
Joseph Newgarden and Colton Herta, and I mean, it's, you know, for us just to roll those names off our tongues so easily, I mean, it just speaks so well for the future, well, for now and for the future of the championship in the series.
So as you know, when I look at Newgarden, it's Newgarden, Pagenaud, and Rossi. We have two races left: Portland, right, and then we wrap up Laguna Seca. Okay.
Yep.
So it's a double points race, Laguna Seca.
Yes.
So it's not, everyone's going like, well, it's 30 points over. I'm like, no, it's not. It's nowhere near over. Back to what happened with Newgarden, I don't think people understand the scope of that. That was a big blow, literally, when he, you know, what happened there.
Well, before he spun on the last corner on the last lap, taking evasive action to miss Ferrucci, he was 46 points ahead. And now he's 38 points ahead. So, hey, we've seen these championships tied at the end and win on a countback, or these championships have been won by a single point. So, you know, 8 points is a big deal, and that actually added to Joseph's frustration. These guys make out like they don't know where they are in the championship. They know exactly where they are in the
Absolutely.
Championship.
These guys are fighter pilots, man.
8 points is a big deal.
We had Newgarden and Scott Dixon in studio after the Detroit Grand Prix when they were here, and there was a point where they were very cordial sitting here. But when I mentioned the championship, the two of them just looked at each other for a split second, and it was that look. And we kind of called them on it. Said, did you guys just size each other up? And they're like, maybe.
Yeah.
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 Maybe we did. So,
yeah.
Lee Diffie with us, and thank you so much for the time, Lee. Always love talking with you, man. So Alexander Rossi is on the cusp once again. Once again, he's right there to win a championship. If you're Honda, you know you're competing against Penske and Chevrolet and this Goliath, a team that can throw as much money and resources at it as any racing company in the world, right? I mean, they have unlimited resources, basically. If you're Honda, though, looking forward to next year, do they put more focus on Rossi trying to get him past these Penske cars? Can you do that?
I don't think you can single Alexander out, because he's part of that. You know, he's part of the greater team and the bigger picture with Andretti Autosport, of which I think we wait very eagerly for official confirmation that Colton Herta will be a fifth Andretti car. I mean, he kind of is now, right?
Right.
But the formal the formalization of it, and you have to, in all due respect to Harding Steinbrenner Racing, that's the racing organization that he competes for. However, they are in a technical collaboration with Andretti Autosport. However, I'm led to believe, and it's yet to be confirmed, it's just one of those rumours that's out there at the moment, and our friend from racer.com, Marshall Pruitt, wrote about it the other day, that there's speculation about a fifth car, but I'm led to believe that it will be confirmed, certainly before the end of the year, that Colton Herter will be an official Andretti Autosport driver before the year is out, or for 2020. So I don't think you can put all of the eggs in your basket on Alexander Rossi, although he is, you know, the lead. Himself and Scott Dixon are the lead Honda drivers. But I think, I know where you're going with this because I've thought about it already. What if, for the second year in succession, Rossi finishes second? I mean, he's such a driven competitor. He's so so passionate and so driven. But then when I was thinking about that just the other day, it made me think back to Will Power. It's not like it hasn't happened before. It's not like somebody's had to, you know, settle for second, you know, in multiple years or consecutive years. So, and you know, Will was made to wait for it, and then he did become a champion. And so, you know, Rossi's not going anywhere. He's not going away. Honda's not going to fall off the face of the earth. Andretti Autosport's not going to fall off the face of the earth. So if he doesn't win it this year, which I think up against Pagenaud and Newgarden's going to be a tough task, if he doesn't win it this year, it's going to hurt. It's going to suck for him. It's going to hurt Andretti Autosport, you know, but as far as not being able to promote and boast the champion. But, you know, just fast forward, you and I can be talking this time next year, and I don't expect Alexander Rossi to be in any different position. He will be in the top five, if not the top three, again this time next year.
Well, and it is a different dynamic. You know, I think about what's going on with Ferrari this year. Again, pointing back over to F1, Charles Leclerc was never supposed to be the number one driver, and he is the number one driver for them, whether they want to admit it or not, right?
I think so.
Right.
I
mean,
I don't know what's you know, the Vettel situation mystifies me a little bit. I'm quite intrigued by that, and I just think, you know, being a four-time world champion, it's natural. He was at Ferrari long before Leclerc. He naturally, you know, he's your team leader, and you have to go with that. But you know, there's as time goes on, there's more and more things that Sebastian does that are kind of really odd and mystifying, and the decision making, and then there's a lot on the team as well. And I think for the transition to the future, you know, you have to start investing in Leclerc, because I think he's special. I think he's truly special, and I think he can be a Ferrari world champion before Sebastian Vettel will be a Ferrari world champion.
Well, I think that's what I was what I was getting to, Lee, was like, I think that's what's a little different about this is you've got Scott Dixon, who's a multiple-time champion racing with Ganassi, but then you're looking at Alexander Rossi, which to a lot of people is one of the two or three faces of IndyCar going forward. That's why I was saying, like, if you're Honda, you obviously want to give all the teams the same support, but maybe behind the scenes, you really want Rossi to win a championship. You really want to get him over.
Yes. Yeah. And look, they're never going to let us to be privy what's behind closed doors, but Honda did do that. That's why Honda threw as much as they could at Alexander Rossi and Andretti Autosport to keep that partnership together, because Penske wanted him. You know, Penske have been incredibly impressed with what he's done in the Acura sports car when he drove, right from the very first time he drove it. He fits their clean-cut corporate image, says the right things, races well, he's a winner, etc. Penske wanted him. And as you know, Penske's a Chevrolet team. So Honda did as much as they could to keep Alexander with Andretti Autosport and Rob Edwards, the COO. He wasn't going to leave Andretti Autosport. And, you know, in a series, especially like IndyCar, when other than the engine manufacturers, it is a spec series, same chassis, same wheels, same tires, everything's the same. The big variable is the human resource side. And when you have a partnership like Jeremy Millis, Alexander Rossi's engineer, with Alexander, with Rob Edwards, the strategist, that's a pretty hard combination to break. And so Honda didn't want that combination to be broken. And so they did as much as they could to keep that little trio together.
What's going to happen with Hinchcliffe next year with all the McLaren stuff and his relationship, obviously, with Honda, you know, as a face for them, especially like Honda Canada and stuff? How are they going to make this work?
I don't know. He'll land at a Honda team somewhere. I don't see him being part of that McLaren, that Arrow McLaren SP organization. I see him staying with Honda before I see him staying with that team, just because of the long-term relationship. Remember that McLaren slash Arrow Schmidt-Peterson had to come to some financial agreement with Honda to let them out of one more year of that contract to go to Chevrolet. So Honda received some nice money back so they can help place James somewhere, but where they place him, I don't know. It's a great question. But I see that, and that's just my take. That's not on any privileged information. Right. That's just my gut feel. I just see him being with a Honda team somewhere as opposed to being with McLaren, Arrow McLaren SP.
And then next year, obviously, with McLaren, I would assume that you're going to see Alonso get a car for Indy.
I hope so. I really do.
He can't leave it like that. He can't leave it like that. There's no way that a guy that competitive can leave it where he didn't even qualify.
And look, and you said you had Scott and Joseph Newgarden in the studio earlier this year. Just ask any driver who's done an Indy 500 qualifying weekend. It is harrowing. It's gut-wrenching. It's nerve-wracking. Just to do your four-lap sequence, first of all, just to qualify for the field, and then if you have to do it again to make the top nine, or if you're involved in bump day and you have to do it again. So, just to do two runs is harrowing enough. Do you remember that day? Do you remember on bump day when they sent Alonso five times?
Oh, it was tragic. Yeah, it was tragic and compelling at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, what he did for that team is above and beyond. And everybody said that. Way more experienced than me. And so I don't, I think like most of the motorsport world, there's a lot of Alonso fans out there. I'm one of them. I think what he's done in his racing career is incredible. And I'd like to see him have another shot at it, because you remember what he did when he drove, for Michael Andretti.
Yeah.
2 years ago. And, I think he led 25 or 27 laps or something, and he had a shot at winning the race. And I think, with a more stabilized program, more precision and less running about and chasing their tails. I think if there's a stable organization that he can just be plugged into, I wouldn't be surprised standing here talking to you on your show in years to come talking about Fernando Alonso, the Indy 500 winner. I mean, I think most of us would agree on that. So, yeah, can't leave it the way it's been left. Give him another shot at his, because he wants to, he wants to win the triple crown of motorsports. He wants to continue with his big ticket motorsport events. He's doing the Dakar Rally next January. So, I think he wants to one day do the Bathurst 1000 in supercars in Australia. I mean, I just love this journey that he's on right now. Before I'm too old, I'm gonna check all the big ticket items in world motorsport off my list.
Have you given Rossi any advice for Bathurst?
No, I haven't spoken to him about it actually. But the good thing is James Hinchcliffe, who he's driving with. James has driven the V8 supercar before, so that will help. James will be able to, they've already been talking about it so much, and Alexander's been watching a ton of videos. So James will be able to help him with some of the nuances and the little idiosyncrasies of the car, because they're actually not easy cars to drive. So I think they'll be a good combination. And I think for Alexander, for all of the racetracks that he's driven around the world in his GP3, GP2 and F1 days, all the racetracks he's been to, whether he's driven them or not, he's certainly walked around them or jogged around them or gone around on a scooter, this one will absolutely blow his mind. Because, I've been there so many times in my life, but when I went back there in 2011 with Darrell Waltrip and Mike Joy and Calvin Fish when we did it live for Speed Channel, I just remember seeing Calvin Fisher's and Darrell Waltrip's face when we went up on top of the mountain. They were like, you are kidding.
Oh, the hot lap that Darrell Waltrip did is one of the greatest pieces of video ever, ever.
Yeah. And you think about what that guy's done in his racing career. And Calvin Fish back in the early days was a rival with Ayrton Senna in the junior formula in Formula Ford and F3. And I mean, those guys are like, they're doing speeds of like this, and this track is like is about as wide as a sidewalk, you know.
So I was going to say, like, Lee, was whoever designed that track, were they drunk? They decided to build it around a mountain where you can't see where the hell you're going?
Well, you got to remember, it's public roads. They're public roads. Public roads turned into a racetrack.
Wait a minute. So up the mountain's a public road too?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know this.
There's all farms and vineyards and everything that people live. People live on the inside and the outside of the track.
Never knew that. I always assumed it was a closed track.
No. They're public roads. And they close the track for sessions. And then even on race weekend, the locals are allowed to get back on the track and drive up and get to their properties.
I still love the fact when you come off the mountain, though. People talk so much about the mountain, but that straightaway when you drop down and you see the mist and the fog there, and you have no idea where you're going at 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Oh,
pretty crazy. That's why I'm excited for, you know, even though Hinch has driven a V8 supercar, that was on the streets of Surfers Paradise at the Gold Coast. So neither of them have driven Bathurst, but I think it's going to be an awesome experience. It's going to be right up there with their career highs for sure.
Lee Diffie with us here. Isn't it funny how, you know, the demise of motorsport racing has been greatly exaggerated? I mean, the ratings are up for Indy. F1 has become, all of a sudden, has compelling storylines again. NASCAR, for all the people complaining about nobody's in the seats, that Bristol race, unless I'm crazy, there were a lot of goddamn people at that race. I mean, they were there.
There's still a lot of people there for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I certainly don't subscribe to that theory. I think we've had... Right across the board, we've had an unbelievable year in motorsport. So, and it's far from over. You know, I don't know if you're a two-wheel fan. MotoGP has been awesome, including the race at this past weekend. Supercross and motocross season has been awesome. The sports car season is wide open.
Yeah.
You know, and now we're coming down to, we're almost in the playoffs for NASCAR. IndyCar is, you know, it's going to go right down. I think this is going to be something like the 13th or 14th. Just think about that, Jim. This is going to be the 13th or 14th consecutive year that the championship will be decided at the last race.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's such great news. Here's my prediction. And you guys posted a tweet from him. Jimmy Johnson will try to get a ride next year at the Indy 500.
I wouldn't be surprised. Why not? Kyle Busch desperately wants to do it. I think Jimmy would be incredible. I remember when Jimmy, back in the old Grand Am days at the Rolex 24, when Jimmy came in and did some sports car racing, it took Jimmy only about 6 laps, and then, boof, he was on the speed, on a very similar speed to the sports car regulars in that car. I think Jimmy would be great. We saw how effective Kurt Busch was. He was incredible. When he did, he finished 6th from memory. At his first attempt, I think Kyle would be very good. You know who I'd love to see? I'd love to see Kyle Larson there. And I think it's on his to-do list as well. So, yeah, be great. Great to see
Kyle Larson,
NASCAR champion at the Indy 500.
Yeah, Kyle Larson would be the only IndyCar driver to drift.
Yeah, true.
He's the most
compelling. And he wouldn't be afraid.
He's the most compelling driver for me in NASCAR because he's been touched with all this talent, and you just watch him week to week, and you're like, I don't know what the hell's going to happen, but it's going to be entertaining.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
All right, man. Well, Lee Diffie, thank you so much for the time. You're heading out to Portland, and what time are we on Sunday for Portland?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, all the stuff's online. Don't worry about it. No, we got it online anyway. It's all there for NBC and then Laguna Seca as well. Wow.
And the important note there, Jim, is it's on big NBC. So not NBCSN. These last two IndyCar races are on big NBC.
Oh, look at you.
Great.
Okay. So in 2 weeks from now, when we're all done, who's holding up the title?
I think Newgarden. Yeah.
Okay.
I think he'll hang on. I think Simon Pagenaud, and I think Joseph Newgarden, and I think Scott Dixon is far from done. But I think at the end of the day, I think Newgarden will hang on.
Hypothetical: if Pagenaud didn't win Indy this year, would he be driving for Penske next year?
No,
I totally agree. I think once he won that, you can't cut him. You can't.
I think if he didn't win that, and Roger didn't come out so quickly, Roger Penske didn't come out so quickly and said he'll be in Mooresville, North Carolina next year, meaning at where their headquarters are. I think if Simon didn't win the 500, I think Penske would have doubled down on Alexander Rossi. and that's the way it would have gone. But I'm so pleased for Simon. He throughout his racing career, from when he was a young guy to now, he has not changed. He is still the same guy. He's not let the fame go to his head. He hasn't changed, and he is driving as well as he's ever driven. And I'm just so pleased for him to have this the year of his career right now, because, you know, his words to me earlier this year, after he won the 500, he just said, over and above everything else, he said, I'm just happy that I was able to do that to prove to everybody, because he said last year and early this year, he said, I got beaten up pretty good by people, meaning fans that maybe had dropped him, or people criticizing, people within the industry criticizing, media coverage questioning what's happened to Simon Pagenaud. And, you know, the old saying, he hasn't forgotten how to drive a car. He just had to get used to this new aero package. And so I'm pleased for him. I've known Simon for a long time, and to see him be a champion and to be able to go back to his native France and celebrate, you know, with his parents and friends and family and at his hometown was just, you know, it's life-changing stuff, Jim. And these guys are good guys, and he deserved that.
I remember, and the photos, if you haven't, the whole photo, that the way he documented the trip to France. With his dog, of course. You got to take
Norman, yeah.
Norman, who's a rock star. But the way he documented is similar to what Takuma Sato. Sato, when he went back to Japan, I don't think Sato understood until he won the Indy 500 what it meant on an international scale. And here he is on TV shows bringing out the Borg Warner. I mean, he was a rock star in Tokyo.
Yes. Yeah. Great. And it's really good for the series, isn't it? And they would have... they'd still be celebrating this past weekend's win in Tokyo right now for Takuma, which is fantastic.
Love him.
He's got numerous Japanese sponsors, and that's really important for him to maintain those sponsors for the health of him being in the series and what he brings to Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing as well.
He was here at the Detroit Grand Prix, this is probably like 6-7 years ago, Lee, and I asked him, I said, so bigger win, what would be a bigger win for you, Indy or Monaco? And he kind of went, Monaco, and just kind of like, not even. And then I ran into him a couple of years ago after he'd won Indy, and I said, and he looked at me and goes, I'd like to change my answer.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Lee Diffie, always a great follow on Twitter. Keep it up, man. The passion you have, it just pours through the television. All of you guys are having so much fun. I picture you up in the booth just kind of elbowing each other going, did you see that?
Yeah, we are. We do. We are and we do. And then we have to slap PT around every now and then.
I just want it, yeah. There's got to be, you need to just roll tape between commercials and stuff. I want to hear what he does, what doesn't air.
I'll give you a little insight. He sings, and he can actually carry a tune, but he sings the most god-awful love songs you've ever heard. I'll try and tape one, and I'll send it to you once.
You got to.
This past weekend was Barry Manilow.
Come on. He's serenading you to Barry Manilow up in the booth.
He sings to all of us in Barry Manilow and whatever else. Yeah. He's a big softy at heart.
Okay. Well, that's a new one, man. All right. Thank you, bud. Thanks Lee.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. There he goes. Lee Diffie heading out the door. Let me hit my music. What a cool guy. Lee Diffie on Twitter. Of course, obviously what's going on. Like you said, the final two races for IndyCar on NBC on Big Daddy. The other part we didn't get into was, if you think about it, if you're Simon Pagenaud, you've had this amazing year, you're now in second place in the points. Are you the picket for Newgarden to make sure Penske wins the championship? Roger in the past has said he would not ask his guys to do that. But, it's a great time for racing, man. All right. We're out of here. You can always hit me up on Twitter at WCSXGym and subscribe, of course, here wherever you... listen to podcasts as well. Thanks so much for our friends at B-Pod Studio as well for putting this out there. Be well.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.